Hey, 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 this is Al, and let me tell you, nonprofit investigative reporting isn't easy. This work can make us weep, make us sick, make us angry. It demands conviction, time, and money. But we do it because it creates real change. We produce some of our most ambitious projects this year. Stories about migrant children, police reform activists, Amazon data exploiters, rookie doctors, and domestic abuse survivors. We examined how justice works differently for different people. But to keep doing this work in 2022, we need your support. I'm asking you to donate to Reveal today. This is our most important fundraising campaign of the year, and it ends December 31st. Just text the word REVEAL to 474747 right now to donate. If you give $9 a month, we'll send you a Reveal keychain, but you have to donate before 2021 ends. Listener support is how we make the show, so show your support and get a Reveal key ring. Again, just text the word REVEAL to 474747. You can text STOP at any time. Standard data rates apply. Thanks.
Reveal is brought to you by Progressive. Are you thinking more about how to tighten up your budget these days? Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save over $700 on average, and customers can qualify for an average of 6 discounts when they sign up. A little off your rate each month goes a long way. Get a quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National annual average insurance savings by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2020 and May 2021. Potential savings will vary. Discounts vary and are not available in all states and situations.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Ike Sriskandaraja, in for Al Letson. I want you to picture a scene. Hundreds of people standing on the granite steps of the Capitol building.
What do you say? Stop the steal!
Stop the steal!
But it's the Capitol building of Colorado in April 2016.
Do you want your freedom back?
Yes!
Also worth noting, this crowd is angry at the Republican Party, and the steal they want to stop is the nomination of anyone other than Donald Trump for president. This was the beginning of Stop the Steal. And it wasn't just a catchy chant.
So we've got these pamphlets here. Go to stopthesteal.org. And I think you'll understand that this is the group that's going to be key to making sure Colorado's voices are heard.
From the start, Stop the Steal was a group of activists and a set of tactics. In Colorado, it started at the caucus that Saturday, when Ted Cruz won all the state's Republican delegates. Donald Trump started complaining.
The bosses and the establishment and the people that shouldn't have this power took all of the power away from the voters.
Voters took it out on the local establishment boss, state GOP chairman Steve House.
Every single day when he would say something, my phone would ring with somebody else. You know, I hope your daughters are burned in cages and raped by extremists, and we're on the way to your house in Colorado right now.
Stop the Steal was trying to harness that anger Trump had whipped up and point it at the upcoming Republican convention in Cleveland to get the party to pick Trump through a show of force.
Come to Cleveland. March on Cleveland.
That is longtime Trump advisor, seven-time convicted felon, and founder of Stop the Steal, Mr. Roger Stone.
We will disclose the hotels and the room numbers of those delegates who are directly involved in the steal. We urge you to visit their hotel and find them.
This plan to storm the 2016 Republican convention, it didn't happen. And it was largely forgotten because Trump won the nomination fair and square. But Stop the Steal didn't stop there. It's now been a year since pro-Trump rioters stormed our nation's capital, assaulting police officers and threatening members of Congress and the vice president. Today, we revisit a show we first brought you last summer about how misinformation and conspiracy theories begin and the damage they do when they stick around. Up first, Stop the Steal. Reveal's Stan Alcorn has been tracing the history of those three little words, He picks up the story back in 2016. Here's Stan.
As soon as he won the nomination, Donald Trump started saying the 2016 election was going to be rigged. And StopTheSteal.org explained exactly how Hillary Clinton and the Democrats were going to reprogram Diebold voting machines and also flood the polls with, quote, illegals. To stop them, Stop the Steal was calling for an army of volunteers to show up at key precincts on Election Day looking for fraud. Whatever happened, Laura Starcheski was going to cover it for Reveal by shadowing the Stop the Steal point person in Philadelphia, a Democratic city in a swing state where Trump insisted there'd be voter fraud. As far as you could tell, what was Stop the Steal in Philadelphia in 2016 in reality?
Yeah, there did seem to be grand plans. Like when you would go to the website, Stop the Steal looked like they were organizing people. But then when I was with Jack that day, it was kind of just Jack.
Jack is Jack Posobiec, a Game of Thrones blogger turned pro-Trump Twitter troll who was working with Roger Stone. On election morning, Laura caught up with him at the Philly GOP headquarters.
How is your mood right now, would you say?
Oh, I'm excited. Are you kidding me? I live for this. I live for the adrenaline rush of Election Day, exposing the flagrant abuses of our democracy. This is like, it's like Christmas morning.
He's basically like pacing around and like waiting for word that something has happened so he can rush to the scene. And then finally, like, something happens and he's like, okay, it's on. So we jump in the car.
As you can tell, I've been kind of living here.
Jack's driving and this guy, other guy jumps in the back seat.
Okay, I'm gonna call the lawyer and then I'm gonna call a bunch of media people.
Can you identify yourself?
Albert Eisenberg, Philly Republican Party.
What's your role?
Communications lead. Do you have any napkins or anything? I don't want to drip.
It sounds like he's eating a sandwich.
Yeah, Albert had a hoagie, and he's like cramming this hoagie in his mouth. And
hey, Dennis, we are headed to you now. I think this is going to be the story of the day for us, so we're really going to push this.
And Albert is like freaking out.
You can prep her, just relax her, and keep the message sharp and tight.
Like, he's so excited.
I mean, that first thing, my name is Brittany, I forget her last name, Foreman, and today I witnessed voter fraud, period. Awesome.
And he starts making all these calls.
Hey, this is Albert Eisenberg. We spoke pretty recently.
Trying to get other media to come to this polling place where we're headed.
Hey, we got a really hot issue of voter fraud up in Winfield, and we're headed there now.
Meanwhile, Jack is using his phone to talk to his followers on Twitter's live stream video app, Periscope.
So, hey, this is Jack Posobiec. Okay, got another report of voter fraud. Al is working to get some of the more traditional media. We're covering it live because that's how we roll around here.
At the time, it seemed clear that, like, they were trying to discredit the election before the election happened, just finding ways to delegitimize it. And I guess I was just like, this is so weird. Like, what are they going to say when we get there? Like, I was really curious to see how Jack would filter what was happening to his followers. And would it work?
There's Brittany.
So we pull up, and there's this woman, Brittany Foreman.
Can you tell me what happened? I'm a reporter for Reveal Radio.
Tell both of us.
Yes. From the time I came in, it was an issue with the committee person.
And to be honest with you, like, it was a little confusing and hard to figure out what exactly the complaint was. At one point, it seemed like she was saying,
Then I witnessed him actually go.
There was someone with the Democratic Party who was going into voting booths with people.
And offered to assist the elderly inside the voting booth.
But then it was like, is that person just helping?
I don't know what he was doing. I don't know what he did in there. He could have been hitting the buttons for all I know.
Interestingly, Jack didn't seem that curious about her or what the account was. And Jack kind of like goes off to the side just talking to his followers.
Working together, complete collusion.
And I was like, oh.
Allowing them to get away with murder in terms of politics.
It's like, go there, be there in person, set it up so that something could have happened. And then you just say that it happened. And you were there, and so it seems more legitimate to people.
That's why I'm periscoping this. That's why we've got other media out here. We've got other media coming that we're going to expose this for what it is and let people know. So At some point, I would like to use that.
At the same time, across town, the phones are ringing at the hotline set up to deal with allegations like this one. It's run by the Philadelphia District Attorney's Election Fraud Task Force, made up of several dozen investigators and more than 70 lawyers, including Andrew Welbrock.
It was all run-of-the-mill complaints. You know, I went to vote and my name must have been purged from the register. When's the last time you voted? 1994. Well, okay, that's why. Nothing actually alleging a crime.
It sounds like it's a lot of...
Babysitting? Yeah, I mean, we are often put in the position of basically being told we're like the referees.
But as the day goes on, they start to hear stories that are more disturbing.
Some of the younger prosecutors start saying things like, hey, we're seeing this on Twitter, we're seeing this on Twitter.
It's like the players are taking their complaints to the fans instead of the refs. The Philly GOP tweets that a voting machine is defaulting to Clinton when voting for Trump. And they tweet out a video of Brittany Foreman, hashtag voter fraud illegal. It opens with Albert's line from the car.
My name is Brittany Foreman, and today I witnessed voter fraud.
You know, there are people screaming at the internet about all these things that are happening in Philadelphia, but we weren't getting phone calls.
Albert Eisenberg claims the Philly GOP was calling in some of these complaints, but the DA's task force?
We did not get anything akin to what the Philly GOP Twitter account was putting out all morning. And at 2 p.m., we did a big press conference.
We have no founded complaints of intimidation, no founded complaints of voter fraud.
We basically said, Philly GOP, please call us if you have these complaints and we can address them. And at 2 p.m., they stopped tweeting. So, like, we asked them to put up or shut up, and they decided to shut up rather than provide us with evidence.
But the internet does not shut up. The Brittany Foreman video is retweeted by people like Jack Posobiec and ultimately watched hundreds of thousands of times. It's picked up by websites like InfoWars and Breitbart, with headlines like, Philly poll watcher says she personally witnessed voter fraud. Still, all this is a one-day story. Trump wins the election that night, and most people move on, including Andrew.
To me, it came and went, and that was that.
Until 4 years later, when Andrew would run the Philadelphia Election Task Force for the 2020 election.
Here we are now, just hours from Election Day 2020.
The Trump campaign calling for thousands to monitor what the president insists is an election rigged against him.
Go into the polls and watch very carefully, because bad things happen in Philadelphia, bad things.
When we got that hotline up, it's when we realized that, you know, things are going to be very different. We're getting calls from, like, guys in Texas. Oh, they're stealing the vote. They're putting banners on the buildings. We're like, sir, that was taken down right when the polls opened at 7 a.m. You're lying to me. All right, what do you want me to do? Like, it's not there.
At some point, they start getting calls about a video going around on Twitter.
You're not letting me in?
Well, no. What? No.
It's 30 seconds long of a middle-aged white man demanding to be let into a funeral parlor where people are voting.
I have a citywide watcher certificate.
And it's not for this location.
No,
the tweet says, a poll watcher in Philly was just wrongfully prevented from entering the polling place, which is technically accurate. The poll watcher, Gary Feldman, should have been let in.
Had Gary Feldman called us to say that, we would have said, yes, he is allowed to be there. That's not what they wanted. They wanted a show. They wanted that headline that you referred to.
So he didn't make a complaint?
No. I mean, that was like a deja vu of 2016. It was the same deal all over again.
But saying it was the same deal as 2016 is kind of like saying two fires are the same when one is a candle and the other is the fuse of a bomb. One of the many groups monitoring and countering election misinformation that day was First Draft News. Laura Garcia in their UK office had the early shift.
So actually, the first thing that I remember really digging into on that day is that video.
The tweet doesn't give a location other than Philadelphia. So Laura tries to look for clues in the video itself.
Just because someone says it's Philly doesn't mean it's Philly.
But by the time she tracks it down, the tweet is already going viral.
It's one of those like worst case scenario things. We just saw it starting to pop up on Instagram and then somewhere else across different influencers who were talking about it. And we then started to see it in headlines.
The lead story on Breitbart was "The Steal is On" in Pennsylvania. Poll watchers denied access. And then there's the little three-word hashtag at the end of the tweet. What did you think when you first saw those words, "Stop the Steal"?
Oh, man, it's such a good hashtag. It's short, it's punchy, it's active. It tells you as an audience that there's something that you can do about it. Plus an alliteration in there, which is always nice.
The Stop the Steal hashtag was being tweeted more than 10,000 times an hour at its election day peak, attached to all kinds of different conspiracy theories. But it was all kicked off by this one video of poll watcher Gary Feldman, with a push from someone who met up with Gary later that day to do a Periscope.
So I'm here live, and I'm here with Gary Feldman, who has gone viral this morning.
Yes, that is Jack Posobiec. He went from running the Philly Stop the Steal operation out of his car in 2016 to being able to kickstart the nationwide Stop the Steal hashtag in 2020.
People don't realize how centered he's become in the world of right-wing media. He is a huge star.
Michael Edison Hayden wrote an investigative series about Jack's rise for the Southern Poverty Law Center, where he's a reporter and spokesperson. Jack's opening act was at the dedication of the National Museum of African American History and Culture, where Jack showed up in a Hillary Clinton mask carrying a sign that said blacks are super predators.
That's how he kind of burst onto the scene. And then from there, the next time he does a live streaming stunt, it is Pizzagate.
He live streamed from a pizzeria.
Comet pizza. Here we go.
To play up the conspiracy theory that Democrats were running a child sex ring there.
We were doing some high-level stuff here, guys. We were doing some very high-level stuff.
As Michael and others have documented, Jack worked with white supremacists, doxed an alleged victim of sexual abuse, and routinely pushed disinformation. But each controversy just brought him more attention, more followers, and no real negative repercussions from Twitter or from the right-wing media.
I think on the right, social media is viewed as this sort of battle zone, and they view Jack Posobiec, I think, as a guy who just fights relentlessly, and they don't care that he fights dirty.
Especially because of the way he fights for Donald Trump. After Trump praised both sides of the deadly white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Jack asked in a tweet why the mainstream media wasn't instead covering gun violence in Chicago.
I'm looking at what I'm seeing out there.
Then he went on live stream.
Huh? Trump just retweeted me? Dear, apparently the president just retweeted me. Can you get, like, your phone or something? I didn't know this.
Oh, my gosh.
There you go, folks. There you go. There it is. There it is.
By the time of the 2020 election, Jack was a correspondent at the One America News Network, and he had more than 1 million Twitter followers, including President Trump and his two adult sons. What does it say that Jack has been able to achieve that level of legitimacy?
Or at least the appearance of legitimacy.
Yeah.
I think what it says is that the right in this country, they have created a kind of an entirely bizarro ecosystem of media and commentary. You know, if you look at some of the figures who promoted Stop the Steal, for example, of which Jack Posobiec was one of them, I mean, these are people with no discernible credentials whatsoever outside of social media manipulation.
Not only had Jack become a star, he was part of a whole new Trump media galaxy. Four of the top institutions studying social media misinformation got together for the 2020 election as the Election Integrity Partnership. And they put out a list of the most influential repeat spreaders of false and misleading stories on Twitter. The top 20 included Breitbart News, Fox's Sean Hannity, and right between Donald Trump himself and an account with a username CatTurd2 was Jack Posobiec. Jack declined to comment on this, by the way, other than to say he shares things his followers might find interesting. Anyways, after Election Day, the viral lies that these and other influencers were sharing got increasingly detached from reality. In Philadelphia, the first big new allegation Andrew Welbrock had to deal with was a claim that Republican poll watchers couldn't see the counting of the votes.
You know, we didn't get any calls about it, but we saw it online, and was it Corey Lewandowski was outside the convention center yelling that into a megaphone? So I walked into the room. Hey, who's a Republican poll watcher? Like 5-6 people raised their hands. Can you see? Yeah. All right, my work here's done, and I left.
But Andrew's work was just beginning. His office is now prosecuting two men who drove up to the vote count from Virginia with an assault rifle in the back of their Hummer. After one of them texted, "Going to PA, have a truckload of fake ballots. We're going to raid."
There's like a disconnect from reality that will continue to surprise me always.
The men were initially let out on bail until they showed up at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th.
They're motivated because they think democracy is being stolen. Their rights are being curtailed.
Joan Donovan, research director at the Shorenstein Center at Harvard and a leading expert on misinformation.
Like, this is a reason why people go to war.
And these false beliefs, they didn't stop with the attack on the Capitol. A majority of Republicans still think Trump won the election. Joan thinks that's in part due to being saturated with misinformation, repeatedly in post after post, and redundantly on platform after platform, Facebook, Twitter, TV, radio.
And the repetition plus the redundancy starts to take on the character of something that must be true because a lot of people are saying it. And that's really what media manipulators and disinformers bank on. That's what their strategic advantage is.
Joan sees misinformation as a feature of social media, not a bug. And she thinks dealing with it is a problem a lot more people need to actively be working on in the federal government and also at the social media companies themselves.
If these companies do not start to take bold positions and action on authoritarians especially, then we're going to be in serious, serious problems because we're only 10 years in to the social media era.
Joan thinks another 5 years down the road we've been traveling could lead to a really dark place. But also, she thinks it's not too late to pull the emergency brake and head somewhere different.
That was Revealed's Stan Alcorn. Stan learned a lot more about the first viral Stop the Steal video. You can read it all in the article Stan wrote for Mother Jones and for our site, revealnews.org. Next, we go from Stop the Steal to Stop the Spread. How 1 in 3 Americans came to believe a conspiracy theory about COVID-19. That's coming up on Reveal.
If you like what we do and you want to help, well, it's pretty simple. Just write us a review on Apple Podcasts. It's easy and only takes a few seconds. Just open the Apple Podcasts app on your phone, search for Reveal, then scroll down to where you see Write a Review. And there, tell them how much you love the host. Your review makes it easier for listeners to find us. And, well, it really does make a difference. And if you do it, you will get a personal thank you from me. Like, right now. Like, thank... Wait, not him. Not you. Yes, you. Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. All right.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Ike Sreeskandaraja, filling in for Al Letson. I want to take you back to October 2nd, 2020. President Trump just tested positive for the coronavirus. The country is accelerating into its third wave, and vaccines are still months away. But pandemic be damned, here in New York City, you still have to move your car for street sweeping. So early one morning, I walk out of my building with everyone else parked on the Friday side of our narrow street. I get in the car and I turn on the radio.
Good morning, USA!
To The Breakfast Club. Why don't we start our show that way?
Peace to the planet, it's Friday!
The Breakfast Club is a popular radio show based in New York. It's syndicated across the country and gets 8 million listeners a month and millions more watch online. And this morning, in October, Charlemagne the God, the most outspoken of the three hosts, is riffing on the president's positive test.
What does Charlemagne think? I have a few thoughts. First of all, I'm not about to be happy that Trump and Melania got corona. I will never celebrate something happening to a person that I don't want to happen to me and mine.
And I'm listening along, kind of nodding my head, like, I wonder what is going to happen to the president. He's in his 70s, he's overweight. And as I'm thinking this, Charlemagne takes the conversation in a direction I don't see coming.
But the conspiracy theorist in me simply doesn't believe it. I really just feel like this is a ploy to change the headlines, or it's a ploy to, you know, get y'all to line up to take that goddamn value menu vaccine that they're going to be rolling out, because he's going to be the first person to act like he's taking it and be the hero. And next thing you know, all of y'all going to have microchips in y'all booties right in time for goddamn Thanksgiving.
Microchips? In the vaccine.
Millions of people line up to get it, and boom! Microchip implants for all of y'all.
Before we go any further, we gotta say there is no microchip in any of the vaccines. And maybe Charlemagne is assuming that his listeners know this theory is laughably bogus when he says,
and next thing you know, you're gonna have a microchip in your ass.
But by the fourth time he repeats it, I'm wondering, we all know he's joking, right? In the U.S., the end to this pandemic feels almost possible, an arm's length away, but only if enough arms get the vaccine. There are lots of reasons people give for not getting a COVID vaccine. Personal choice, religious exemption, or general distrust. Then there are the conspiracy theories, which have spiked during the pandemic. The World Health Organization calls it an infodemic, where dangerous medical misinformation sows chaos and mistrust, and makes the pandemic even worse. It's been so bad that the WHO named vaccine hesitancy one of the top 10 threats to global health. So, does hearing a bogus theory, like the one I heard in my car about microchips, does that actually influence people? I called a doctor who works at the closest hospital to where I heard that conspiracy on the radio, Dr. Jordan Dow.
So for the past 4 years, I've been in residency at Kings County Hospital / SUNY Downstate in Brooklyn.
Dr. Dow works in a major public ER that serves mostly Black and Latino patients. And when we spoke, he'd been getting a lot of questions about the COVID vaccines.
Yeah, almost regularly, almost daily. And then also, you know, like nursing staff who comes up and asks, like, is this safe? And other staff in the hospital who says, is this safe?
Whenever those questions came up with patients or staff, Dr. Dow listened.
I first have to hear all their concerns. I have to let them get it all out because I don't know what of my concerns are irrelevant to them. So I just want to hear, like, what are like the main things that keep you from doing this?
Patients would tell him they're suspicious of how quickly the drug was developed, the financial interest of drug companies. All of that, Dr. Dow was happy to discuss.
Appropriate skepticism, I think, is essential.
No, it's not skepticism. It's actual distrust.
Charlemagne the God on The Breakfast Club takes it even further.
And I'm sick of people acting like the distrust black people have for that vaccine isn't warranted. I've never seen this government be in a rush to combat any other ailments in the black community. Not the racial wealth gap, not police brutality, not lack of health care, mental and physical. But all of a sudden, y'all want to come in and save us with this vaccine? It's been too much malpractice done to melanated people for us to just all of a sudden trust y'all in regards to this vaccine. I don't care what black person y'all get to take it publicly.
Charlamagne was unconvinced by PSAs of black celebrities getting the vaccine. Dr. Dow, who is black and Latino, also was unmoved by vaccine testimonials. He had to vet the trial studies and the peer-reviewed data himself before he was ready to trust the vaccine enough to take it, which eventually he did. Dr. Dow is open about his own distrust of the medical system, but there's another kind of skepticism he has less patience for.
Like, the things I'm sick of hearing are that we're putting a 5G microchip in with a swab.
This is a variant on the microchip vaccine conspiracy theory I had heard. Dr. Dow's patients worried that a tiny piece of tracking technology was at the end of the little COVID test Q-tip going up their nose. And apparently, this conspiracy theory came up a lot.
So I had to swab like hundreds of people, and like 20% of them thought I was putting something in their nose. And like, I would just look at them like, this is not the time to play. Can we please move on?
But lots of Americans are having a hard time moving on from this very concern. A poll found that more than 1 in 4 adults said they don't know if the COVID vaccines contain a tracking microchip. That's nearly 70 million Americans.
This one in particular, this microchip one, is just big. It's everywhere.
This, again, is Joan Donovan from the Shorenstein Center at Harvard. She's a leading expert on disinformation and early in the pandemic studied the spread of this lie.
It touches all different kinds of folks, and it keeps coming up in these different ways.
The microchip conspiracy theory has infected communities, urban and rural, black and white, liberal and conservative. And she tracked the lie all the way back to where it started.
The microchip stuff comes out of this very nascent conspiracy.
So let's do a little conspiracy contact tracing. Like so many conspiracy theories, this one's based on a tiny kernel of truth. On March 18th, 2020, Bill Gates logged on to a Reddit AMA to answer people's questions about the new surging pandemic. And in that chat, he predicted one day we would all carry a digital passport for our health records. Not a microchip, but some kind of e-vaccination card that we would show to get into places. The next day, a website that calls itself the first and only news source on biohacking wrote about Gates' comment. I talked with their admin, who goes by the name Cypher, and this is going to get weird. Cypher belongs to a community of biohackers who advocate for human implantable microchips. They also have them. And they gave their blog post the untrue headline, "Bill Gates will use microchip implants to fight coronavirus." But even these futurists couldn't have predicted what would happen next.
Hello, this is Adam with Law of Liberty. I want to share an article with you today. Look at this. Bill Gates will use microchip implants to fight coronavirus. That's right, Bill Gates.
Just 2 days after the blog post, a Baptist pastor from Jacksonville, Florida, makes a biblical case.
It's not just an implantable ID system. It's literally worshiping this beast, which is the Antichrist, that gives glory to the dragon, which is the devil. That is Satan. So this mark of Satan that Bill Gates warns about, hey, it's true.
It's not. But this video, with its incomprehensible logic, quickly gets 1.6 million views. An order of magnitude more than anything the pastor's account had ever received. A few days later,
Bill Gates invents this chip, and they just announced that they're considering using it.
A New York comedian uploads this.
Now, once they have that chip in your body, who knows what they're going to do, right?
A day later,
we know for sure it's a plandemic.
A survivalist joins in.
Bill Gates doesn't want anybody moving around in the country or abroad without a certificate verifying that they've been vaccinated.
Tell me if you've heard this one. A pastor, a comedian, a doomsday prepper all walk into a, well, that joke's not worth repeating. But people repeat this lie all over YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, and Facebook.
But it's really a story about Roger Stone.
Again, Joan Donovan, disinformation researcher at Harvard.
Which is just Roger Stone being Roger Stone.
Roger Stone makes a guest appearance on the Joe Piscopo Show, AM 970, New York City.
Roger Stone standing by, Joe Piscopo on the radio.
Joe Piscopo is an early SNL star who now hosts one of those incredibly long daily talk shows. And it's here on April 13th, 2020, during the fourth hour of the Joe Piscopo Show, that Roger Stone becomes one of the super spreaders this lie has been waiting for.
First of all, thank you. Roger Stone, the legend, on the phone with Joe Piscopo.
Piscopo barely tees up Stone with a question about the virus before Stone lays in.
Here's how I try to break it down.
Please.
Whether Bill Gates played some role in the creation and spread of this virus is open for vigorous debate.
Wow.
I have conservative friends who say it's ridiculous. I have others who say it's absolute. But here's what I do know for certain. He and other globalists are definitely using it in a drive for mandatory vaccinations and microchipping people so we can tell, quote unquote, whether you've been tested. You know what I say, Joe? Over my dead body. Over my dead body.
Later that afternoon, the New York Post runs the headline, Roger Stone, Bill Gates may have created coronavirus to microchip people.
And then it just went totally, you know, brr on Facebook.
Brr is disinformation expert slang for the moment a rumor jumps from the fringe into popular consciousness. The New York Post story and the Baptist pastor's video are liked and shared all over Facebook.
And we don't really know how it's developed since then.
Since April of 2020, the lie keeps spreading and mutating.
A recent Microsoft patent, 060606, aka 666, involves another implantable device for the
into new variants.
They have to have a sensor attached or installed into the body, which you'll be paid in cryptocurrency.
Reaching new hosts.
And these chips, by the way, aren't just the little passive ones. With the super sensors now, they can actually
across the globe.
In italiani, questo video condivido importanti informazioni relative all'impianto di microchip RFID.
Guarda sua idea. Gates Foundation. Orang menggunakan implant microchip tangan mereka.
But the viral lie at the center stays the same.
Where this ends, and I know this sounds like the stuff of madness, and 12 months ago, you would never hear this come out of my mouth, but this does end with a little tiny microchip in our hands so that it's easier to get in the pub and out.
When I reached out to YouTube to ask how they moderate medical misinformation, no one would talk to me. Instead, a representative sent a statement saying they've removed 900,000 misleading videos about the coronavirus, including 30,000 videos just about vaccines. YouTube even has a policy banning videos that claim there are microchips in the vaccine. But when I was reporting this story, all the YouTubes you heard were still live, including the video that helped spark this whole conspiracy theory. The one from that Baptist pastor in Florida.
Embedded quantum dots into the body to keep your medical records. And this is part of a larger agenda. This is part of...
It had racked up nearly 2 million views. So I sent YouTube a link asking why this viral video was still active. 48 hours later, and more than a year after it first went up, YouTube decided to take it down. In total, the company removed 6 out of the 7 videos I asked about. The comedian got to stay. TikTok removed 5 out of 6 videos I asked about. And Facebook says it removed 16 million pieces of content that violated its COVID and vaccine misinformation policy, and says it slapped warning labels on 167 million pieces of content rated false by their fact-checking partners. But even that jaw-dropping amount is just a fraction of what experts say is out there. The Center for Countering Digital Hate, an international NGO that studies online misinformation, found that platforms failed to act on 95% of COVID and vaccine-related misinformation reported to them. So when people go looking for information about the vaccine, there's a chance that the first thing they run into might be a lie.
It's a life and death decision.
And Joan Donovan says that could sway whether or not people choose to get vaccinated.
We don't know how many people are not showing up to the doctors because they believe this, but the ones that do feel vulnerable, and that vulnerability is totally artificial.
If the platforms are petri dishes of bad information, who's paying attention to those lies and trying to inoculate the public with timely, accurate, real information? Polls show many Americans still haven't made up their minds about the vaccine. Nearly 20% say they refuse to get it. How much of that has to do with misinformation? And what does that mean for the end of the pandemic? I called one more doctor.
So I'm Lee Riley. I'm professor of infectious disease at the School of Public Health at the University of California, Berkeley, professor and head of the Division of Infectious Disease and Vaccinology.
Dr. Riley says something I hadn't heard anyone else say before. And in a way, it's good news.
I'm not that concerned about the 20% of the people who end up not receiving the vaccine, because many of these people will get naturally infected. And if they get naturally infected, they'll become immune.
Unfortunately, it's not good news for everybody.
If they continue to resist getting the vaccine, yes, they'll get sick. Many of them will get hospitalized. And you know, some of them will actually die.
Well, it sounds a little cold to the people who they're no longer with us.
Well, you know, this is their belief system, and they made the decision to not get the vaccine so they can exercise their personal liberty. This is what happens. Nature always takes care of itself.
But our information ecosystem doesn't. We reached out to the people involved in the start and spread of this lie. Many wouldn't talk to us, but Roger Stone wrote me back. He said the idea of a microchip in order to track who has been vaccinated is no crazier than the idea of a vaccine passport. And when I reached out last year, the CDC did not respond to questions about how it was combating vaccine misinformation. But the Surgeon General has since called it an urgent threat. Lies, misinformation, and conspiracy theories aren't just dividing our country. After the break, we hear from a family that's split between two realities. That's coming up on Reveal.
Do you want to know more about how we do what we do? Well, our weekly newsletter takes you behind the scenes. Our investigations change laws, minds, and sure, we like to say it, the world. Be among the first to read them. Just text newsletter to 474747. You can text stop at any time. Standard data rates apply. Again, text newsletter to 474747.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Ike Sreeskandaraja, in for Al Letson. Today, we revisit a show we first brought you last June, one all about lies and misinformation. Roughly a third of American adults continue to believe that the results of the 2020 presidential election were fraudulent. That's around 90 million people who believe the lie that the election was stolen from Donald Trump. Lucy Concepcion is one of them.
I like Trump. I see the conservative agenda that he brings to the country. And I know that there are corrupt politicians that is fighting and all that stuff. But then to you, it seems like it's a conspiracy.
The you Lucy's talking to is her son, Albert Samaha, an investigative reporter at BuzzFeed, where he first wrote about their strained relationship.
What have been the main challenges?
Well, the challenge may be that my ideas are different from yours. You know that I believe in QAnon, right?
Lucy treads in the world of QAnon. Albert works in the world of verifiable information.
You think you're right, but to me, I think not. So I think the challenge that you have is to convince me that you're right. But then knowing your mom, who's very strong in her faith, will be hard to convince.
It's a dynamic that so many American families are trying to navigate. What do you do when someone you love believes in an elaborate series of lies? So we asked Albert to tell us how he and his mom do it. How do they manage to stay a part of each other's lives while living in fundamentally different realities?
When I was growing up, I was an only child. She was a single mom. So it was kind of just us two against the world at every step. It was my voice that she gave most weight to, whether it was like, should I keep dating this guy or should I take this job or that job? We were paddling in the same direction and I valued the same things she valued. What are your hopes for the future?
For you or for me?
Both. For both of us, for each of us.
Well, I wish you would be on the same conservative political views. That's my hope.
Anything else? That's it? Nothing else matters except that?
Yeah, for me, because, I mean, it's just, I think you were trained differently from where I was coming from, what I learned about politics.
She grew up in the Philippines, and Ferdinand Marcos, who was president at the time, declares martial law in 1972. The presidency becomes a dictatorship. You know, she grew up believing that America was the most stable place in the world. I think like a lot of immigrants, her American dream was rooted in the opportunities of her children. I think she also, you know, at least for a time, achieved the American dream that she wouldn't say was primary, which was her own success. Because there was a moment in the mid-2000s when, you know, we were flying super high. She was a real estate agent and she was selling a dozen houses a year. She bought a Benz. And then, you know, like millions of other people, my mom was hit really hard by the housing crash. And when the market collapsed, she had to sell my childhood home at a loss. And she has been trying to claw her way back since. So this is now around like 2010. As the financial troubles were happening, the voices she trusted were like calling Obama Muslim and un-American and making up all this disinformation about him. She was beginning to turn to more and more of these far right-wing sites that were popping up on the internet.
My friends were all conservatives, right? So we share the same ideas. But then to you, it seems like it's a conspiracy. And I don't blame you. It's just because you don't see it. I know that, especially as a journalist, you have to see evidence. Okay, my friends, we believe what is being said.
You know, she had grown up in a society in the Philippines under a dictatorship where she always believed that there were dirty machinations happening on behind the curtains. By 2018, she starts to tell me about these posts online that claim to be written by a high-level government operative with Q-level clearance. And this person claims the sprawling global child trafficking cabal.
People will be shocked. People will be shocked when they find out about Oprah Winfrey, a lot of Hollywood people, a lot of politicians. I mean, people just don't realize.
Trump is battling this deep state. He's got this grand plan to arrest everybody involved. And that's what this is about.
The reason why it's not being exposed yet is because a lot of people, they might just go crazy if they find out, what? Tom Hanks? He drinks adrenochrome? This guy's a pedophilia? He's supposed to be a good person. And
all this. Especially as an investigative reporter, where my entire vocation comes down to proving the truth to other people. The fact that I couldn't convince my mom of what I found to be obvious truths was very frustrating.
How has it felt to navigate, like, these past few years, our relationship?
It's been difficult, I think, because we're both pretty hard-headed. I think we're frustrated by the same things, which is that there's nothing we can say to convince the other person.
I feel right now it has come to a point that whatever. Okay, if that's what you feel, that's fine. I still love you. I cannot convince you. I think same as you.
They sort of shifted my measure of success away from having to persuade her and to more so try to understand her. And it occurred to me that this was also a much more productive approach for our relationship.
At least our sometimes small arguments, it's not even arguments anymore, but like when we share whatever beliefs we have, this can just be the spice of life. It just makes life better or more fun than if there wasn't anything to talk about. So I think it's okay.
Albert and Lucy have spent more than a decade arguing, trying to convince each other what's true and what's not. So at this point, they joke about it, about whether or not the alleged cabal of blood-drinking Hollywood sex traffickers will be brought to justice.
Well, we have our bet, right? It's supposed to be, it has to happen by August. If it doesn't happen by August, then I win the bet.
Yes, a dollar. What are your hopes for yourself and for me?
I want to be rich enough so that you never have to work again. I want you to have peace and be able to spend your days doing whatever you want.
That's the most that I can ask for.
If the arrests don't happen by August, will you still believe?
We'll talk about the date when Trump is back in office.
You're changing the terms of the wager now. Good talking to you, Mom.
Nice talking to you, little love. I love you. Take care.
I love you too, Mom. Talk soon.
That's BuzzFeed reporter Albert Samaha and his mom, Lucy Concepcion. Since we first aired this story, August has come and gone. Albert says his mom still owes him that dollar. In October, Albert released a book about his family's immigration story. It's called Concepcion, An Immigrant Family's Fortunes. Mia Warren produced this story. Brett Myers and Taki Talanidis edited the show. I was our lead producer. Thanks to Isabel Christo for her research on Stop the Steal. Victoria Baranetsky is our general counsel. Our production manager is Amy Mustafa. Score and sound design by Jim Briggs and Fernando Arruda. They had help this week from Claire Mullen, Brett Simpson, and Stephen Rascon. Our digital producer is Sarah Merck. Sumi Agarwal is our editor-in-chief. And our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camarado Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, the Hellman Foundation, the Democracy Fund, and the Inasmuch Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Ike Sriskandaraja, in for Al Letson, who I'm sure would want me to remind you, there is always more to the story.